In this paper, I'm going to discuss the pottery oil lamps that were recovered from the Portus Magnus of Alexandria, with a special emphasis on those coming from the debris of the Iseum. I will only briefly consider questions of chronology and typology, and mainly focus on the lamp's function and significance in the specific context of the temple to Isis. Only as a reminder, we will note that the Iseum, in red on the map, was erected during the Ptolemaic dynasty on the secondary branch of the island of Antirrhodos, which, according to Strabo, was part of a private royal domain. Evidence suggests that Augustus maintained the temple after the fall of the dynasty in 31 BC, but made it accessible to the general population of the city. As indicated by both pottery and coins, the whole complex was destroyed by a natural catastrophe, probably around the middle of the first century AD, leaving a thick destruction layer of accumulated limestone blocks and architectural remains, mainly on the western side of the island's branch, as seen on the bathymetric map above. This is where most excavation efforts concentrated over the years. However, in 2024, the eastern side of the island revealed a series of clear stratigraphical levels that could be followed over a surface of about 36 square meters. The deepest occupation, layer 4 on the Little Shima, dates from the early 3rd to the mid-2nd century BC, presumably corresponding to the earliest phase of the temple. In most squares, this stratum is separated from the destruction level by a sterile sand layer of varying thickness, which is layer 3 in the diagram. Now, one of the characteristics of the Iseum is the high quantity of lamps that were found there. According to the excavations database, a total of 151 ceramic oil lamps were recovered in the Portus Magnus. Of those, 25 were distributed in various parts of the royal harbour, as indicated by the little crosses on the map. These finds range in date from the early 3rd century BC to the 4th or possibly early 5th century AD. The remaining 126 lamps were directly associated with Iseum, and the majority of them came from the western side of the island, 84%. They were particularly concentrated over a surface of about 12 square meters, suggesting that they were stored together at the time of the building's collapse, probably in the pronaos or the front part of the cellar. From this same area came the remains of the only bronze lamp that was found in the harbor. We may assume that other valuable metal lamps were also kept in the temple, as well as candles and torches. While the former might have been salvaged after the building's destruction, the latter would have not left any trace in archaeological record. Whether all these lamps, ceramic or otherwise, had been purchased by the temple or were gifts from visitors remains unknown. But a number of Ptolemaic and Roman papyrological sources make it clear that the lighting of the temples was managed from allocated supplies by priests. For example, a priest in charge of the lamp of the god Ptah is mentioned in a land plot register from the late 2nd century BC in Memphis. Another most pertinent example in the context of the Alexandrian Iseum is an Oxyrhynchus papyrus dated to the first year of Octavian's rule over Egypt, of which you have the translation on the screen. It records an oath given by the priests Thonis and Heraclitus, both lamplighters to the temple of Serapis and shrine of Isis in Oxyrhynchus. They swear by Caesar, god and son of a god, that they will superintend the lamps of the above-mentioned temples. Beside those reserved to the daily running of the temple, lamps together with torches and candles were essential to the lamp-lighting festivals and processions that were characteristic of ancient Egyptian cults and later influenced Greco-Egyptian and Roman religious practices. Most prominent among those linked to Isis was a festival of the Navigium Isidis, which marked the opening of the navigation season in early March and serves as a background to the final chapter of the adventures of Lucius in Apuleius' Metamorphoses, written in the 2nd century AD, taking place in Cenchreae, the eastern harbour of Corinth. The celebration described in this book included a procession by a large group of both sexes with lamps, torches, candles, and every kind of man-made light to honour the source of the heavenly stars. The high number of lamps discovered in the ruins of the Isis sanctuary of Antirrhodos confirms the importance of light in the cult of the goddess. For a great majority, so 93%, these belong to mold-made types of the early Roman period, with wheel-made examples representing only 7% of the total lamp finds. That is only 9 individuals. Of those wheel-made lamps, 5 were found in 2024 in the Ptolemaic level of the eastern side of the island. One, the first one here, is of local manufacture and bears a pre-firing and deciphered inscription under its base. The other 4 wheel-made lamps are of Greek origin and correspond to early Hellenistic Attic types, as early as the second half of the 4th, but continuing into the first half of the 3rd century BC. The other wheel-made lamps are later in date. They all come from the temple's destruction level on the western side of the island's secondary branch and belong to the later Ptolemaic or even early Roman period. 2 are Cnidian, of a type that is commonly found in the eastern Mediterranean between the late 2nd and mid-1st century, the first 2 on top, and which is also known from land excavation at Alexandria. The last one is a parallel from the Temple of Demeter on Cnidos. The third, at the first on the bottom row, is a Palestinian Herodian lamp, so-called because the type appearance coincides with the reign of Herod. And the last one is a small lamp with a central tube of uncertain but presumed local origin. The remaining 117 lamps are all mold-made and come from the building's destruction levels on both sides of the island. Without going into intricate typological considerations, this diagram summarizes the type's occurrence and their frequency in a broadly chronological order. We can see that the great majority of the lamps belong to types Lushke 1, 4, and Brunner 21. Some of them have long chronological ranges, but most of the examples here date to between the Augustan period and the mid-first century AD, hinting at the intense activity of the temple at that time. 5 lamps are earlier, at the beginning of the graph. Potentially, like the wheel-made types just considered, dating back to the late Ptolemaic period. And only 8, belonging to Lushke 5 and 8, at the end of the graph, are probably later than 50 AD, thus confirming the proposed dating of the destruction of the temple. 3 are unique in the present context and will be discussed separately. Like for the wheel-made examples, only few are of Egyptian manufacture, and even fewer, namely 2, the first ones above, correspond to the typical locally made late Ptolemaic models that are otherwise well known in Alexandria or from sites such as Memphis, Heracleopolis Magna, and areas of the Fayum. Chronologically consistent with these types are three Ephesian molded lamps, though they appear as early as the 2nd century BC in some places. It is significant that they only occur at Cenchreae in context post-dating 44 BC. In this respect, their chronology fits well with the post-Ptolemaic phase of use of the Antirrhodos Lyceum. The first of the unica lamps with a side handle and angular nozzle belongs to a very distinctive type dated to the Augustan period. It is usually ascribed an Egyptian origin because, with one exception from Delos, all examples with known provenances come from Egypt, whether purchased on the antiquity market or found on excavations. However, I have great doubts that our example is of local manufacture because neither its fabric nor its surface treatment look Egyptian. The second is an early Augustan Vogelkopf lamp, a type that is very rare, if not unheard of in Egypt, but more prevalent in central Italy and the western Mediterranean. Finally, the third is a bow-shaped lamp, the first one on the slide, possibly of local manufacture, and most likely dating to the mid or second half of the 1st century AD. Only the top part of the lamp is preserved. It represents a boat's deck with a figure sitting at its bow, holding a pair of rowing blades. The image of a boat in the context of a temple to Isis inevitably evokes the feast of the Navigium Isidis mentioned earlier and its description in Apuleius' Metamorphoses. In particular, it draws attention to a passage where Lucius, still in his donkey form, witnesses the arrival of the priest of Isis, who follow in the steps of the initiates. He describes how the first priest held a glittering lamp shaped like a golden boat, a boat cup, depending on translations, with a tall flame flaring from its central vent. It is not clear which material this sacred lamp was made of, perhaps gold, but certainly not ceramic. In spite of its relatively coarse workmanship and small size, a boat-shaped lamp may have been a token left by a dedicant alluding to the boat lamp of the Isis mysteries. As it is, in the same spirit, other boat-shaped lamps clearly bear connection to the cult of Isis Aphrodite. The one illustrated here, kept in the British Museum and dated to 70 to 120 AD, is 63 centimeters long. Its iconography associates Dionysiac imagery with the couple Isis Serapis, and a tabella ansata placed on the center of its deck mentions the epithet for the Cnidian Aphrodite. The remaining of the molded lamp, that is 109 objects, refer to the Italian lamp types of the 1st century AD, also called medallion lamps because of the decoration they bear on their top. Most of them have dimensions varying between 6 and 8 centimeters in diameter, so fitting very nicely into the palm of a hand. This suggests that they were not intended as fixed objects, but were often carried around when lighted in or around the temple, perhaps a bit like a modern torchlight. The only ones that tend to be larger, sometimes considerably larger, are the Löschke III Bruno 21 types, whose diameters often exceed 12 centimeters. According to its reconstruction, based on the size of its reflector, the largest of all probably had a diameter of about 21 centimeters and could hold close to a liter of oil. Its reflector is elaborately decorated with a bucolic scene representing Dionysus on Naxos. Here set aside other lamps at the same scale to see the difference in size. When filled up with oil, this object was probably quite heavy and bulky, and it is more likely that it was used either at a fixed light or, like the boat-shaped lamps of Apuleius, in the framework of special ceremonies. This large lamp offers a good example of the sometimes complex iconography that may be found on the medallions of these objects. If we divide them by theme of representation, we see that 27 have no decoration or no extant decoration. This relatively high number can be explained by the presence of fragmentary lamps whose decoration was not preserved, as well as by the fact that early Brunner 21 lamps of the late 1st century BC and early 1st century AD generally had plain, undecorated medallion. 36 lamps of our assemblage have non-figurative or floral motifs like rays, ovaries, acanthus leaves, petals. 16 lamps bear animal representations, either real or mythological animals. Here we have lions, eagles, a dog, a cockerel, and a frieze of mythological terrestrial and marine animals. Only 2 lamps are erotica, and 1 is a fragment of daily scene. 14 have religious themes, often, like the large reflector mentioned earlier, linked with a Dionysiac circle, like panthers, Wisconsinthroi, satyrs, a Nerotes, a figure of possibly Isis. And 15 have gladiatorial subjects, generally single gladiator or combat scenes. Some of these categories have obvious connection with the cult of Isis, but for others, the link is more tenuous, to say the least. This is particularly the case for the last of my categories, which is a small group of 5 objects that seem to convey a political or ideological message emphasizing the power of Rome. In spite of their presence in a temple to Isis, these lamps have no regards whatsoever for either Egyptian or Greco-Egyptian sensibilities or religious notions, quite on the contrary. The first 3 are all related to Victoria, who, like the gladiators, is a very common subject on lamps throughout the Mediterranean. One representation shows the goddess's attributes, and the other 2 her personification. On the first, an Augustan Loschke I lamp, the goddess is standing on a globe, and on the other, which is a large Brunner 21 reflector of the mid-1st century AD or later, she is holding a shield that bears the remain of an inscription reading Ob Cives Servatos, for having saved the citizens. This phrase goes back to Augustus. It is found on his coinage and was recycled on coins of Vitellius and Vespasian. Parallels to the image of Victoria with the inscribed shield are known elsewhere on lamps of the Augustan period. It was suggested that such images of Victoria, in particular the one standing on the globe, are allusions, if not reproductions, of the statue that was erected by Augustus in the Roman Curia after his victory at Actium. The next image is on a small sized Loschke I lamp. It illustrates the patriotic tale of Marcus Curtius' sacrifice, known to us from Livy's book 7. As the story goes, in 362 BC, in the early Republican period, a large sinkhole opened in the Roman Forum, and the gods demanded that Rome sacrificed her most precious possession to save the city. A young warrior named Marcus Curtius declared that nothing was most precious to Rome than arms and valor. Mounted on his horse and dressed for battle, he plunged into the chasm, thus saving the city. The image of the warrior raising his spear with his cape flapping in the wind and his horse bending his right front leg in his fall was a popular iconographical motif in early imperial Rome, here on a relief from the Roman Forum. Finally, The last lamp, which I placed in this category, is a larger Brauner 21 type that bears a very enigmatic scene. We see a naked and unkempt bearded man armed with a sword and cowering away behind his round shield. Facing him is a godlike figure of a clean-shaven young man with short hair, also naked, but for the folded drapery over his shoulder. He repels or moves the shield, but without showing any aggression. So far, I have not found a good parallel for this image, whether on lamps or elsewhere. In the absence of a more suitable interpretation, we may understand this scene as an allegory of the emperor pacifying the barbarians, and it may thus be considered together with a pro-Roman ideological subject. Now, to conclude, the lamp finds from the Anti-Rhodes Museum span from the still mysterious earliest phase of the temple in the mid-3rd and 2nd century BC to its destruction around the mid-1st century AD. The dense concentration of lamps within a single context is exceptional in an Egyptian setting, even from an Alexandrian perspective, and further supports the religious character of the site. The dominance of Italian-type lamps in the early imperial period, most of which were imports from Italy or East Greece, is also significant. While some, often East Greek in origin, allude to the Greco-Egyptian notion of Isis and Osiris in his Dionysiac form, others bear typical Roman motifs, such as animals, gladiators, or themes glorifying the new ruling power. Our picture is partial, because we only have clay lamps remaining, which is the cheapest kind of lighting implements, and we miss the more expensive metal models, which may have been more directly related to the cult of Isis. Nevertheless, the small clay lamps, probably dedicated by individuals, also translate the political realities of the time. They are not only an important chronological marker for the temple and its history, but through their origin and iconography, are also the reflection of diverse traditions and ideologies that allow us to evoke the long-gone individuals who use them and the world they belong to. In their own ways, they illustrate some aspects of the assimilation of traditional Ptolemaic cults into the Roman world and echo the Exirhynchus papyrus mentioned earlier, where the two lamplighters of Isis and Serapis do not only swear their oaths of service to the overseer of the temple, but first and foremost to Caesar himself, thus acknowledging him from the very start as a new supreme ruler of the country for both secular and religious matters. Thank you for your attention.